Last year marked the 14th consecutive year the United States experienced 10 or more billion-dollar disasters. We are here to explore this today. Welcome to Future Risk, presented by Zurich North America. We explore the changing risk and resilience landscape and share insights on the challenges that face businesses to help you meet tomorrow prepared. We're kicking off our extreme weather podcast miniseries by focusing on the immediate risk that businesses face. I'm Arun Sivasubramanian, head of Zurich Resilient Solutions, North America. And today I'm speaking with Pete Caminiti, Chief Underwriting Officer at Zurich, North America. Pete, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Arun. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Pete, let's jump into it and maybe clarify some myths, if you will, right? So basic question, when we say extreme weather, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, I think in the context of the conversation we're having today, when I think about extreme weather, I think about it from a couple of different angles. I don't think it's not a defined term, but I think about it in two different ways. I think about weather events that are known weather events that are getting stronger and more severe, right? So I think about, if you look at the hurricane activity over the last several years, I think one of the observations that many of us have is that storms intensify much quicker. They get much larger in a much shorter period of time than they had in the past. When I think about extreme, that's the extreme that I'm thinking about for a known peril or a known condition like hurricanes during hurricane season. The other side of extreme is weather events that were not common, not frequent in certain types of geographies. And now we see those manifesting in a more material way. So I think about that, things like the Texas winter storm that we experienced a few years back, winter storm activity that's happened in the Northeast recently, that Northeast is used to winter storm activity, but has had some impact. You think about wildfire, and we all think about wildfire in California, but wildfire exists and occurs in other states, right? And we're starting to see that have a more significant impact in areas outside of where you would be accustomed to having some of those, you know, really significant impacts. So extreme for me, again, just to recap, it's the known events like a hurricane, but just becoming much larger, developing much quicker than we've experienced in the past. And then it's those geographies that are being exposed to weather events that maybe were less common in the past.
That's a good summary and a nice way of thinking about it. Do you think we're actually seeing more events? Are they more extreme?
So it's interesting. It depends on the different perils that you're talking about. And some of it is difficult to answer because the scientific data is not there, right? We have a really good record for certain types of activities and some of the historical record for other types of activities. We just didn't have the same level of observation. So one of the things that you'll often hear in just regular media reporting is, you know, the frequency of tornado activity. You know, tornadoes are happening much more common than they were in the past. You know, that's a little bit of a question mark from a historical record standpoint because we didn't keep records once upon a time, right? And so that tornado that may have passed through that geography where nobody lived, nobody worked, went unreported, went undetected before we had radar. Today, we have people living in areas that they weren't living before. We've had the urban sprawl. So we're getting more record of some of these events. So some of that may be a false signal of increased frequency, but there's other perils for sure where you can be absolutely certain that we are having greater frequency of some of these extreme weather events, and they're occurring in places that they hadn't before. So we've seen a shifting of things like, you know, the tornado alley, the hail belt. Those things have been drifting. The geographic map is being changed on where we think these things happen on a regular basis.
That's a fair point. You know, maybe combine the last two topics a little bit. So yes, you know, certain perils and certain type of events are happening more and more, but also you see several events happening concurrently or coming together, right? That's really causing like a Lollapalooza, almost like a very far more significant event. So 1 + 1 in extreme weather does not equal 2. It's often 10 or more, right? So you mentioned the Dallas freeze a few years ago, right? And there, you know, what we saw was several things coming together at once, right? And the three things that jumped to my mind, and I know you have a lot more, you have a lot of experience in this side, is, you know, we had colder weather than expected. Yeah, that's one thing. And then it lasted longer than we expected. So that's the second part. And on top of that, buildings were less occupied than usual, right? So we didn't have people there to remedy the situation on time either, right? So it just ballooned. How do you think that kind of plays out, what you see?
And I'll take it back to my definition of extreme weather. Mm-hmm. When I think about those two categories, this topic that you're raising, it's interesting. You know, when I talk about hurricanes getting larger faster than in the past, this becomes a matter of we have figured out by and large through building codes and engineering how to become really resilient for some of those known perils, right? So if I take a hurricane, the chances of a building surviving in Florida today than 20 or 30 or 40 years ago is much higher. Mm-hmm. The challenge with the extreme weather is the bar continues to raise, right? And so the standard that we've adopted to make that building resilient 5 years ago may not be sufficient 5 years from now, but it's an engineering problem that we can solve, right? Mm-hmm. The other weather, the other type of extreme weather, the weather that's occurring someplace that is less common or it's a fairly new kind of development, the Texas freeze being a good example. Now, they've happened in the past, but not in a long time. And this one, I think what these types of weather events do is they expose the vulnerabilities, right? Mm-hmm. You and I can only get so creative in thinking through what all of the different potential vulnerabilities are. Mm-hmm. When the event happens, there's one we didn't think about or two we didn't think about, right? And so when we see the Texas freeze, it's a culmination of a lot of different things that happened, and it exposed multiple vulnerabilities. And it would have been probably a little difficult or a little far-fetched to imagine some of these things that we then experienced, and we can learn from those. So as you mentioned in the winter freeze, mm-hmm. It was colder than expected. It happened longer than expected. It happened during a period of time where buildings were less occupied. It also happened during a period of time where, and what's different than the last time we had significant freeze activity like this, is much greater reliance on renewable energy, right? Mm-hmm. Texas is a very large wind state, and their wind turbines are a very important part of their energy production. They're also an isolated energy grid. Mm-hmm. And so they have less ability to maneuver and absorb power from other parts of the country during some of these periods of time. That extreme cold, longer than expected, also affected their other source of energy generation. They rely very heavily on natural gas energy production. Those gas lines froze, right? Mm-hmm. So it's this combination of things that happened that were maybe a little bit different than the last time they experienced something like this that really helps expose some of the vulnerabilities. And I think that's the thing that's probably most challenging about extreme weather. The hurricane that we figured out how to protect to a category four, we'll figure out how to make it stronger to a category five. And if a five becomes a six down the road, there's not a six today, but there's talk of, do we need a six because of, you know, some of the wind speeds that we were actually observing.
Yeah.
We'll figure out how to do that. It's not often that we see after hurricanes, you know, buildings blown to the ground any longer. Now we're dealing with the rainfall that comes along with these big storms, but mm-hmm. it's these other types of events that make it really challenging for us to really get creative to think about how to become more resilient.
Very well said. I mean, what's interesting to me is sometimes I'm not sure if it's just our natural bias. You know, once we see something, we see it everywhere. But like so many of the recent events, if you look at it, you see a similar pattern, right? So, for example, you know, we even seen in Spain, Valencia, right? So we had rain, which led to flood, which led to mudslide, right? So secondary perils, perhaps, but you know, all of them happened concurrently. It just has a massive impact. We've seen hurricanes, for example, on the East Coast, right? So we've seen significant unexpected loss events outside the hurricane area just because of additional moisture that came in, right? So moisture goes in, goes to a place where it shouldn't, like say a hot oil tank, and all of a sudden you have a very different story, right? And so it doesn't feel like it's isolated. You see that happening more and more, just interaction of different variables that we can't predict. It's very difficult, right? So it's almost the unknown unknowns.
Yeah, and your point about this bias of you see it once and you see it multiple times.
Yeah.
We do end up spending more time focused on maybe things that we didn't talk about in the past. And it may mm-hmm. have to do with the fact that we've actually gotten really good at controlling for the primary thing. I mentioned hurricanes, right?
Yeah.
You know, so you're referring to Hurricane Helene last year that brought yes. tremendous amount of rainfall to the southeast. It made landfall across Florida. There was devastation in Florida, don't get me wrong, but we actually focused our attention as a community on the impacts in the Carolinas and mm-hmm. you know, through that region of the country, because that devastation was so extreme. The storm was a powerful storm, but we've become so resilient to the primary thing of wind and the you know, surge that mm-hmm. that became less of a story, because while there was still impact, it was these other things. So part of the reason why we might be talking about some of these sort of secondary and tertiary impacts is because mm-hmm. we have gotten good at controlling the primary, but I think it's a good lesson that we can't let our guard down. And when we attack the primary concern, we need to then turn our attention to these secondary and tertiary concerns, because we're seeing that they are quite devastating.
We talked about some of the causes and, you know, things we should be thinking about. What are some of the things that customers can do to mitigate these?
Like I said, I think we've gotten really good at coming up with engineering solutions to address the known risks, right? And I think there's some really great examples. I mentioned, you know, fortunately, with the number of landfalls that we've had from hurricanes, we don't often see the complete devastation or wiping out of communities. Now, it happens, right? And we saw western coast of Florida over the past couple of years take some pretty significant direct hits. And there were some communities that were significantly affected. But there's also great examples where communities and individual businesses have found ways to be tremendously resilient. Tampa took two direct hits last year, or near direct hits last year. Surge is the big concern, right? They've learned to engineer for wind, but surge is the concern. And there's a terrific example of a hospital in the Tampa area that made the investment in temporary surge walls. Now, these walls have to be installed prior to an event, so it takes some preparation. They obviously have to be on hand and ready to go. But it was really remarkable to see how effective this surge defense was. They set it up not once, but twice, because there was back-to-back storms. And with both storms, there was minimal impact to the hospital. It's an important hospital for the community. To have that hospital online and accessible to the community during an extreme weather event is so important. And to see that surge defense work so effectively, it really tells you that if you're willing to invest the time and energy and money in finding some of the defenses, there are a lot of things that we can do to significantly reduce some of our risk to this extreme weather. Now, with that said, you're not going to engineer your way away from a direct hit from a EF5 tornado, EF being the enhanced Fujita scale that's used to measure tornado extremes between 0 and 5, 5 being the most extreme. There are very few buildings that would be able to withstand a direct strike from an EF5, and it's something that there's diminishing returns in trying to protect against that. But it's the less severe storms, the EF3s, the EF2s, the 1s, the 0s, you know, making sure that you're doing the right things to secure your equipment, to secure aspects of your building. That's really where you have the opportunity to make a difference in that type of extreme weather.
Very well said. I feel like that's probably two of the biggest misconceptions I hear about extreme weather. But one of them is, you nailed it right there. That is, we tend to focus on the worst possible case. And we think, oh, we can't do anything about this. Between normal today and that, there's a lot of things we can protect against. You still had a great example in Tampa with that hospital. We've seen a lot of the wildfires all around the U.S. and Canada, right? There have been buildings that have been built in a resilient manner that withstood a lot of the stuff. You know, everything around is effectively burned down, but those buildings are so much well intact because they had the right architectural build and advice when they constructed the building, right? And those are just two perils as many other things that you see this with. Probably the second misconception, I think, is, and you actually touched on it earlier on in one of your points, was, you know, often we hear a lot of these events, oh, you know, Hurricane Category 5, whatever it may be, it's a 1 in 200 year event, right? Or this large wildfire, 1 in 100 year event. But that was based on prior measurements. And given how everything's evolving nowadays, it's 1 in every 2 or 3 years, right? So it's far more frequent. And on top of that, as you alluded to, our buildings are not constructed for this. They were constructed to the standards when that building was built. Might have been 50 years ago, might have been 10 years ago. But regardless, since then, the extreme weather itself has evolved so much, we are not up to date for it. So we are not as prepared as even we think we are.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's really an important point that you raise, is that if we think there's nothing we can do about it, we get into this paralysis, right? Yeah. And I think that's where we need to make sure that we snap ourselves out of that and we say, listen, this is not something that's going to happen 20, 30, 50 years from now. It's happening today. There are things I can do. And I think it's really important for companies to think about, and communities to think about, where their vulnerabilities lie. What are the things that are probably most likely to happen? To your point, we're in the insurance business, so we think about a lot of things, right? And I think sometimes people get a chuckle out of some of the things that we do think about. But we have to be careful that we don't spend too much energy thinking about certain things, right? I mean, there's super volcanoes and asteroid strikes that can happen. Let's not go designing our resiliency around an asteroid strike. But let's realize that you know what? It's raining quite a bit these days, and it rains a lot more than it had in the past, or it comes down a lot faster. And to your point, the community that was designed to handle the rainfall, and it's not just the weather, it's the combination of the weather and the population. So that infrastructure was designed 40 years ago or 50 years ago. It's not handling the 2 and 3 times population growth that that particular community may have seen. It's not handling the extreme weather. You know, we see it in our day-to-day lives. And then from our business perspective, we see it in our losses. I mean, we've seen significant weather events where a key contributing factor to the loss was the infrastructure and the infrastructure's inability to keep up with the demand. So it's those types of things that I think is really important for businesses to be thinking about. What are the things that they are likely more vulnerable to? And then what are some of the defenses and preventative measures that they can put in place to either, you know, reduce or minimize the loss and then also recover? That's a really important piece of it too. Again, mm-hmm. if there are things that you can do nothing about, there are things you can do to make sure you're able to recover from those things. And so I think being prepared on the recovery side in addition to the defensive side is probably equally important.
Very well said, Pete. Don't worry about the super volcanoes. Don't worry about the asteroid strikes.
The super volcanoes and the asteroid strikes, we'll have some other things to worry about. But, you know, if we keep the things that are within our control in front of us, again, I think there's been some tremendous advancements in technology and engineering. There's a lot of things we can do these days.
Absolutely. Well, Pete, let's wrap it up with that. Thanks for joining us. Enjoyed our conversation. And thank you for listening. If you like the show, leave a comment or review wherever you get your favorite podcast. Or drop us a note at media@zurichna.com. Stay tuned for our next episode in our miniseries, where we'll dive deep into how extreme weather impacts construction. Alicia Pavelko, Head of Innovation and Sustainability of Construction at Zurich North America, and Doug Stolman, Head of Construction Engineering at Zurich Resilient Solutions, will be joining us. This has been Future of Risk, presented by Zurich North America. Thank you.
The information in this audio recording was compiled from sources believed to be reliable for general information purposes and is intended for Zurich clients and business partners. The information contained here may be useful to you or your enterprise when developing your own policies and procedures. The policies and procedures applicable to your enterprise should take into account the specific circumstances of your business and business environment, which is beyond the capacity of this podcast. Any and all information provided is not intended to constitute advice of any nature and is specifically not legal advice, and accordingly, you should consult with your own legal counsel. We do not guarantee the accuracy of this information presented or any results, and further assume no liability in connection with this recording and the information provided therein. Moreover, Zurich reminds you that the information provided cannot be assumed to contain every acceptable safety and compliance procedure, or that additional procedures might not be appropriate under the circumstances. The subject matter of this recording is not tied to any specific insurance product, nor will adopting these policies and procedures ensure coverage under any insurance policy. We encourage listeners to seek additional information from credible sources. Thank you.